can fix that, you know, the better off people are going to be, the more people will recover, and certainly, you know, the relatively rare number of cases that lead to violence will be decreased. It'll also, frankly, also significantly reduce the numbers of people with mental illness who are in our jails and prisons in this country. Very tragically, jails and prisons have become the de facto mental health treatment system. There are far more people in jails and prisons in this country with serious mental illnesses, with schizophrenia, than there are in hospitals or in community programs.
What about that issue of the jails, the prisons of the United States becoming the warehouses of the mentally ill?
It's, I think, one of the great tragedies of modern time. It's the worst possible place that someone who is experiencing these kind of serious symptoms can be in. It only makes the symptoms worse. Most people eventually are released, and they're not in any position to re-enter communities. And then when they re-enter communities, the services that they need are not available to them. The one positive development that I see happening is that I think there's increased recognition of this. And Catherine mentioned that there have been conservative voices that have been raised in objection to Scott Panetti being executed. There's also been a groundswell of conservative sentiment for putting more resources into treatment for people so that they don't end up in jail and prison. Why? Because it's very expensive to keep people incarcerated, and it is also, from a public safety standpoint, a very bad thing to do.
Catherine Case, the clemency petition for Panetti that you submitted to the Texas Board of Pardons and Parole has received support from conservatives like former Texas Congressmember Ron Paul. Just last year, Paul endorsed a new advocacy group, Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty, saying, quote, "I believe that support for the death penalty is inconsistent with libertarianism and traditional conservatism." Then in November, Paul wrote, quote, "In order to be considered competent for execution, Mr. Panetti needs to understand the reason for his execution. He believes he is being put to death for preaching the gospel, not for the murder of his wife's parents. The circumstances of this case present a situation where execution does not serve the state of Texas." What about this, Mr. Panetti receiving some unlikely political support from the likes of Ron Paul?
What this shows is that there is an emerging awareness around the country, even among political conservatives who I think most people would say, oh, they're strongly in favor of the death penalty. But this emerging consensus shows that there's great concern about who we use the death penalty against. And certainly no one asks to be diagnosed with schizophrenia. It is an incurable brain disease. Nobody asks, as has occurred with Scott Panetti, to be poorly controlled on medication. During Scott Panetti's life, during the years when he repeatedly sought treatment, he was on some fairly heavy antipsychotic medication, but he still experienced symptoms. Nobody would ask for that. And I think what we're seeing among conservatives, among Christian evangelicals, among many people around the country is that people with serious mental illness who become involved in the criminal justice system are less culpable and therefore deserving of more protection from the system. The system has failed Scott Panetti and his family because it has failed to protect him. It failed to protect him from himself.
Catherine Case, we're going to have to leave it there. Attorney for Scott Panetti, Director of the Texas Defender Service, and Ron Hohnberg, thanks for joining us. National Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. That does it for the broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate for Democracy Now!
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Wednesday, December 3rd. Sweet Susie and Sugarfix will be at BBQ in Patchogue, 7 p.m. The Jeff Regan Band, Randy Jackson, and Kane Daly will be at 89 North in Patchogue, beginning at 7. Bob Dylan will be at the Beacon Theater at 8. Pat Metheny Unity Group will be at the Blue Note, two shows, 8 and 10:30. Melissa Aldana and the Crash Trio will be at Small's Jazz Club, Manhattan, 9:30. On your concert billboard for Thursday, December 4th, Wesley Stace will be at the David Rubenstein Atrium Theater at Lincoln Center, Manhattan, 7:30. Ed Ryan will be at the Irish Cottage, Massapequa Park, 8 p.m. Henry Threadgill and his group Zooid will be at Roulette in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Pat Metheny Unity Group will be at the Blue Note, Manhattan, two shows, 8 and 10:30.
If you hear some musician on WUSB, you'll hear where they're playing locally on Concert Billboard. Arenas, bars, coffee houses, or outdoor festivals. They're all here at WUSB.FM/CBB and 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook, New York.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6:02, time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday afternoon / evening. And, you know, today is a day I didn't know that it was. it's Giving Tuesday. Giving Tuesday. That is what this day is. And I learned that by going through email today and realizing that every other email message that I receive, not counting the existing spam, which already goes into a spam folder, I assume, but every other piece of email that actually made it to me was somebody with their hand out saying, hey, it's Giving Tuesday, give me something, give us something, good cause, yeah. I got four separate emails from Stony Brook alone, from this institution right here, not the radio station, the university, somehow seems to think that I'm doing okay and that I want to give back. Well, I got something to give back, all right, but might not be what you expect on Giving Tuesday. Where did this come from? Well, apparently, you know, I'm aware of Cyber Monday. I'm aware of Black Friday. I'm aware of all these things. Usually they're involved with sales and bargains and things like that, but almost every other day is a day that somebody is asking for donations. And I know we're no exception here at the radio station because, yes, we have to do that as well. But I've never heard of a national holiday, I guess, whatever you call a day like this, where everybody at the same time is asking you. I looked it up. Giving Tuesday was actually started in 2012. Yeah, it's only 2 years old, but already look at how big it's gotten. It's a trending topic on Twitter. It's probably in your mailbox right now. It's the Tuesday after Thanksgiving in the United States. So, I actually have a list of the dates here. Last year was December 3rd. This year, December 2nd. Next year, December 1st. And the year after that, November 29th. Hashtag Giving Tuesday is what you will see just about everywhere. It's a movement to create a national day of giving at the beginning of the Christmas and holiday season. Giving Tuesday was started in 2012 by the 92nd Street Y. This is actually an address of where this started. The 92nd Street Y. Not the one downtown, no. They started a different day. And also the United Nations Foundation as a response to commercialization and consumerism. Yeah, I know. Feel like a real chump for criticizing something like this that's founded on good principles and against all the commercialism. But my God, you know, maybe if every single other day wasn't devoted to people trying to get you to give them something, phone calls and junk mail and email and solicitations left and right, maybe I'd be a little bit more open to this. But I don't know. It's just a loud sound in a room full of noise. Giving Tuesday, my God. Well, you know, we can have hashtags for all kinds of different days. I'm open to suggestions on other things that we can do as well. All right, we have a lot to talk about tonight. A lot has happened, obviously, in the last week. But I want to get this over with quickly. Not because it's something that is negative or bad. It's just, we have a lot more to talk about, and if I focus on the FA Cup, it's kind of a diversion from the main thrust of the program. But next week is the next round, so I figured I should let people know in case anybody out there in the United States has actually learned something from or following the FA Cup from back in August when it started to now when it's in the second round proper, as they call it. No new teams will be joining this round. The best teams, the ones that really are good, you know, like Manchester United and teams like that, they don't even have to start the competition until the round after the one coming up, the third round. So, you know, in actuality, they have it easy because they don't even have to start playing games until something like six or seven rounds in. All these other poor teams from 10 divisions down have had to struggle since August. And, of course, most of them are no longer there because they just got too tired and they can't do it anymore. I can understand it. But there is one. There is one team that remains. One team from the 8th division. Now, 10th is the furthest down you can get and qualify for the FA Cup. There are more divisions below that. I don't want to get into it. It goes down to something like 23. But, I mean, at that stage, it's basically like, you know, you call a bunch of your friends and you're a team. It gets really kind of silly. Warrington Town, 8th division, they are in the second round proper. They are the only team from the 8th division left, and they are the lowest ranked of all of them, and they are developing a bit of a following as a result of that. And that's exactly what this competition is about. It's about the underdog. It's about the giant killers. And on the 7th of December, which I believe is Sunday, they will be playing Gateshead. A team called Gateshead, they're in the 5th division. And not only that, they're playing Gateshead at Gateshead International Stadium in Gateshead. So it would seem that they do not have the home court advantage. Anyway, that is a team that we were not following. We started following a different team way back. And actually, the team was Nunnington Griff. We started following them. They lost spectacularly, 10-0 in the extra preliminary round, as they called it. Then we started following the team that beat them, Coles Hill Town. And they defeated Bromsgrove Sporting. They moved on to be defeated by Barwell. Barwell went on to defeat Norwich United and also cruise on Ashton after that. And then I believe they lost to Altrincham. Yeah, and you know what? I kind of stopped taking notes at that point. Well, what happened was we made it into the first round proper. The team that we are following right now is Blyth Spartans. And again, I'm probably pronouncing all of this wrong because, well, it's hard enough following all of this. To pronounce the teams right is Blyth Spartans, they defeated Altrincham, I think I'm told that's how you pronounce that. And so now that is the team that we are following. Blyth Spartans, or maybe Blyth Spartans, not really sure. They will be playing a team known as, okay, and I have a letter actually from somebody who told me how to pronounce the team they're playing. This is from Mark. I was saying Hartlepool because it's spelled H-A-R-T-L-E-P-O-O-L. Hartlepool, as mentioned on last night's Off the Wall, is pronounced Hartlepool. As if there were two E's there. Hartlepool. So pronouncing the E was almost right. And Altrincham is pronounced Altrincham. Altrincham. That's how you're supposed to... It's spelled Altrincham, all right? But it's pronounced Altrincham. Fine. You know what? They're out of the competition anyway, so it doesn't even matter. As one of your listeners pointed out, we do have some weird rules in English, but Welsh is probably worst. Letters change when you change tense in some cases. D changes to double D and so on. Can't remember them all. It's been a while since I did Welsh. Well, thanks, Mark. And yeah, that's a weird place. Some very strange words come out of that region. And it's strange to think that it's attached to England, a land border, and the language is so incredibly different. Anyway, so Blyth Spartans or Blyth Spartans will be playing Hartlepool United. The team we are following, Blyth Spartans, they're in the 7th division, and our Hartlepool is in the 4th division, and that game will be played at Victoria Park in Hartlepool. So, again, no home court advantage there, and that will be played on Friday. There you go. That's it. That's the whole thing. We will report on where it stands next week as we prepare for the third round proper after that. And I don't even know when that is, to be honest. But that's when the big teams start coming in. They really have it easy. It just have to win maybe four or five games in a row, and they're the champions. And these poor guys, they've been playing since August, and it's not like they don't have a season at the same time to also worry about. So, okay, that's where we stand in the FA Cup. See, we got through that pretty quickly. Move on to... actually, you know what? There are a couple of things I'd like to focus on really quickly before we talk about the civil unrest in our country. Yes, the civil unrest. There is civil unrest. There is quite a bit of it. But it's being expressed now. And that's the difference. That's the difference that we're actually talking about it for a change. You know, somebody left me coffee in the studio. Thank you, whoever did this. As you know, it's a struggle for me to make it to the coffee place down the hallway in time for the radio program. Today I left extra early. Oh boy. I don't want to spend time on this, but it's kind of incredible. I left extra early, give myself plenty of time to get there. And I was a nice guy, you know, driving over on local roads. There's the guy was at the stop sign before me at a four-way intersection. You're supposed to yield to the person who got there first, and I did. And the person was confused. I don't know why people get so confused at intersections, but you were there first, therefore you get to go first. But there was all this back and forth. Now you go, I insist, oh, please. Finally, they went. And wouldn't you know it, for the entire 10-mile ride over here, this person was going the exact same place I was, and going very carefully, too. Every single turn, every single light, every single intersection, same thing. He parked in the same parking lot of this building. What are the odds of that? It's like being followed in reverse. But it's okay because, you know, I left so much time that I wasn't even worried. I was really calm and collected. You would have been proud. Wasn't cussing. Wasn't looking at my watch or phone or time device. And then, you know, in the building, heading up the staircase to the coffee place, I arrived at the exact same moment as some other person doing the same. I yielded to that person. I said, no, go ahead. You go first. It's okay. And that person, of course, got ahead of me in line and got into a long discussion at the cashier. I'm being tested. I know. No problem. I can handle these little challenges. All right. So what do we have? You know, this is kind of amazing, and I think not enough has been focused on this in the media, but there is an unmanned test flight on Thursday of the Orion Deep Space Exploration Space... Yeah, this is real. The Deep Space Exploration Spacecraft, which is intended to one day carry astronauts on missions to Neptune. No? No? Mars. Not Neptune. And you know what? Even Neptune technically is not deep space, all right? Now, I know we're still in the infancy of space travel, but I watch science fiction programs, and I've been following this for years, and I know that deep space requires you to leave the solar system and go, you know, out there, really out there. This is kind of like near space. It's the next planet over, for God's sake. It's not that far. They're our neighbors. You know, it's like saying you're going across town when you're actually just going next door. All right, but you know, this is a problem that I have and a lot of people I know have, that we always find fault with things even when we like them. So, they are launching this test on Thursday. Hopefully this one doesn't blow up or crash back down to Earth right away. At 7:05 Eastern Standard Time on Thursday, there is an opening, a 2-hour and 39-minute window, and there's only a 60% chance of favorable weather. I don't understand that. Florida, for God's sake, it's always sunny down there. I have such trouble lifting off from the Earth. The liftoff will be atop a United Launch Alliance Delta IV heavy lift booster. And if you want to check it out, it's over at Launch Complex 37 at Cape Canaveral. It's a $370 million mission. When you consider that, $370 million, that's what they pay for toilet seat handles or toilet handles for. I think they throw the toilet seats in, too, for the Air Force. You know, it's basically nothing. It sounds like a lot. It is a lot. It's $370 million, but we pay so much attention to every penny that NASA spends, and we just let the military go nuts, and don't question that, because that's for our defense, even though the vast majority of it is not. Anyway, this mission is absolutely the biggest thing that this agency is going to do this year. That's according to William Hill, and he should know. He's the Deputy Associate Administrator for Exploration Systems Development. This is really our first step in our journey to Mars. I've been hearing about going to Mars since I was a little kid. And all right, let's do it already. You know, we're doing the Third Avenue subway, or the Second Avenue. You know, it's been such a long time. I don't remember what avenue it's under. Second Avenue subway. We're finally doing that, we can do Mars. So good. You know, that's something that's really positive news. That's not being focused on nearly enough. Speaking of criticizing, speaking of basically turning a negative eye to things, because it's easy to do. Remember, one of the campaign promises that Obama made was that he was going to close down Guantanamo Bay. He's still trying to do it. And when it didn't happen right away, all my colleagues on the left were so quick to criticize and say, oh, look, he lied. He's just like everybody else. He didn't follow through on his promise, conveniently ignoring the fact that he kind of got into a blockade with the Republicans and some members of his own party as well. And it's still happening. Obama's plan to close the federal prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, hit a major snag yesterday as lawmakers finalizing the annual defense policy bill rejected the steps in order to shut down the facility. The final defense bill will not have a provision giving the president the power to transfer terror suspects to the U.S. if Congress signs off on the plan. Our language on Guantanamo Bay will not be in it, said Senator Carl Levin. So you see, every time this happens, it's because lawmakers prevent it from happening, yet Obama will get the blame, and he'll be accused of lying. I don't understand the logic. I don't understand why we have the need to tear somebody down. Well, I do. I mean, every single person in the limelight has to be torn down. I realize that, but let's at least be accurate about it. He did say he wanted to do this. He did try to do this and ran into opposition. Let's at least criticize the people who are stopping it. If we want to criticize him for not taking executive action or something and doing it that way, well, you know, that's not always the answer. It doesn't always work. But it seems like he really wants to shut the place down. And, you know, I would go a few steps further than that. I'd shut the place down. I'd burn the place down. And I'd give the land back to Cuba because it's their land, for God's sake. Why are we even there? It makes no sense at all. And yet we accept this. We accept this year after year that there's a U.S. base right there on Cuba. You know, flip it around a little bit and it doesn't make any sense. You know, a Cuban base in the middle of New Jersey. How about that? All right. Oh, you see this? This was a weird bit of news. A Costco employee stabbed somebody in Rockland County. But the way the story was reported by the Associated Press, this is what really stood out to me. A person has been slashed in an incident at a suburban New York store on Black Friday. But authorities say the crime was not related to shopping. That is the issue. That is something that we care about more than anything else, is that it had nothing to do with shopping. Just a stabbing. Just an employee stabbing somebody. Just, you know, a casual stabbing. But no, it wasn't. Shopping is fine. Didn't have a problem with shopping. Shop with gusto. Continue. And there you go. All right. That's pretty much what else is going on in the world. Now, let's get to the civil unrest that we were mentioning before. I would also, if at all possible, like to open up our phone lines. We haven't done this in quite a while because we've had fundraising. We had a basketball game last week, and I know there are people out there. I hope there are people out there that want to talk about this issue. It's kind of hard to believe, though. Maybe there aren't. I don't know. Here in suburbia, people tend to sort of get dead inside. I don't know how to say it nicely. I was looking up. It's kind of sad. I was looking up Stony Brook as one of the places where perhaps there were demonstrations going on. And I found absolutely nothing. There are demonstrations going on all around the country. People upset at the inequality, at the unfairness, at the killings that are going on. As Obama said, it's not just being made up. The African-American community is not making this up. This actually is happening. You look around, millions of people aren't simply playing a game and trying to get away with something. These are facts. These are facts. There's complete inequity in how people are treated and how people are perceived. And all you have to do is ask people their perceptions. You will find that there are vast differences and very little attempt being made to bridge the gaps. So you have white people have no conception of what it's like to be black and probably never will, but are unwilling to conceive of the fact that maybe it's different. Maybe it's different for people coming from a different place who look different and are constantly viewed with suspicion. What might that do to you? What might that do to the way you live your life? And is that fair? You know, getting them to that stage where they even ask that question to themselves, that is a monumental effort. And all you have to do is look around at the reactions to what's been happening, and you'll see how there is no desire to try and see things from a different perspective. It's just, no, look at these people. They're just burning down their neighborhoods. They just want to steal things. They just want to get away with all kinds of things and blame white people, and they're the true racists. And it's just, we have such a long way to go. If you look at any comment board on any news site, any place, even the New York Times, you will find some of the most shameless racism that you could ever imagine. It's pretty sickening. And it's part of the problem. It's part of why people are out there. So I was hoping to see more of a reaction here. And instead, just business as usual. You know, fraternities, sports, and, you know, getting on with the struggle of getting through school, which I know is a full-time job in and of itself, always has been. And now it's even worse because people are being crippled with debt that will follow them around for decades. That alone is a reason to be out there shouting and screaming. And, you know, when I went to this school many years ago, it was a hotbed of activism. I didn't go to this school when it was really a hotbed of activism back in the 60s and 70s. But there was plenty of controversy and political dialogue going on, basically on every issue you could possibly imagine. I remember there were basically a bunch of Iranian students that walked around with paper bags over their heads because they were afraid of being identified by the secret police of the Shah of Iran. And they were having these vocal demonstrations daily outside the union. And I remember one time coming here to the radio station and there were our own secret police. I say secret police because they were plainclothes and they told those of us going to the radio station to leave the hallway because they were taking pictures of the people with paper bags over their heads having a demonstration outside the union. That is activism. That is controversy. That is getting right there in the front lines. And today, it's just, we're kind of dead inside. It's all about, what kind of job am I going to get? How much money am I going to make? How do I pay off all my debts? Kind of just looking down at the ground and not around you. One of the most disturbing things I remember was when the Gulf War was starting, and people were upset about this every place people were upset. You would never guess from the mainstream media. And I remember going to this other building we have called the SAC, Student Activity Center, main campus where students hang out, and you know, expecting to see some kind of sign of life, protest signs, something. And instead, American flags, we support the troops. You know, it's a valid point of view, yeah, but to be the only point of view next to Go Seahawks? I blame a lot of it on just the way we treat students today. We treat them like children. You know, they basically can't act like adults. We have, instead of helicopter parents for grade school, we have drone parents. Yeah, I just made that up, actually. That's a term I just made. Drone parents are parents that, from the comfort of their homes, are monitoring what their kids do from far away. And when necessary, striking out. And basically controlling from afar. Not bad, eh? So basically, people aren't individuals. They don't express themselves nearly as much. They aren't encouraged to. Unless it's for something that is sanctioned. And that's never what college has been about. For me, anyway. Okay, you know, I didn't mean to talk about any of this. I meant to talk about what's been going on in Ferguson, St. Louis, around the country. Okay. Where do we begin? Well, yesterday there was a bit of a disruption of a speech by Attorney General Holder, giving a speech at a church in Atlanta. A group of chanting protesters interrupted a speech, Atlanta's Ebenezer Baptist Church. But here's what's interesting about this. Eric Holder said the group should not be criticized. There'll be a tendency on the part of some, this is right after they interrupted his speech, there'll be a tendency on the part of some to condemn what we just saw, but we should not. What we saw there was a genuine expression of concern and involvement. And it's through that level of involvement, that level of concern, and I hope a level of perseverance and commitment, that change ultimately will come. And so let me be clear. I ain't mad at you, all right? Demonstrators were escorted out of the church after about 30 seconds, continued to protest outside. They pumped their fist in the air, chanting, "No justice, no peace. We have nothing to lose but our chains." And Holder's response drew a standing ovation from many in the crowd. And hopefully the people that were demonstrating realized that these are different kinds of words that you're hearing. That the people in charge actually seem to care enough to listen to what's being said. Maybe it will result in nothing, but let's not reach that conclusion until nothing happens. I've seen some very encouraging words from Obama. I've seen some very encouraging words from Holder. And I've seen some not so encouraging words from many others. And that alone is reason to start listening to the people that actually do seem to care, that do seem to take this seriously. And you have to ask yourself, you know, look back on other administrations in this country. What kind of a response do you think would have been given to the events that have been going on? Certainly, George W. Bush would not have said anything encouraging. And I dare say Clinton would not have said anything encouraging either. So that's one bit of news there. Now, there was the incident with the St. Louis Rams football. By the way, did I say the Seahawks before? I meant Sea Wolves. And I was talking about Stony Brook. Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter. It's all escapism. But yeah, occasionally, though, through sports, you can reach people, make them think. And that's what happened the other day with the St. Louis Rams. They basically, do you see this on television? And throughout the media, there's a lot of attention given to this. They held up their hands. Five St. Louis Rams players raised their hands on Sunday in solidarity with the protesters who were upset at Michael Brown's death. St. Louis Police Officers Association says it's profoundly disappointed with those football players who sent a silent but strong message before playing on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. You know, and there was also talk about whether or not the NFL would prosecute these people, prosecute them for expressing themselves. And of course, they didn't. wisely. That would have been insane. But the fact that people are thinking, yeah, you know what, this kind of thing cannot be tolerated. Well, this kind of thing should be encouraged. This is speech. This is thinking. This is taking action. And not just playing out the status quo. If you have a position of power, a position of influence, you should use that for the greater good. And letting people know, letting people who are upset at how they have been treated, how the people around them are being treated, letting them know that you are there and you are listening and you are on their side. It's vital. It's an obligation. And it should not be looked upon as a threat to those in power. Those in power should look upon that as a service, because these people are telling you something that you need to know. Something that's really, really important. And you can try and ignore it. You can say, they're just making it all up. It's nonsense. And you can basically have this quote-unquote forum on racial equality and racial relations on Fox News. Have you seen these? They have these occasionally. Invariably, they're made up of a bunch of white guys, and as a concession, they add a white woman as well to talk about racial relations in this country. And they expect people to take this seriously. And the thing is, people do take it seriously. A lot of people do. I have this device. Got it online. You can get one too, called the Fox Safety Device. Let me explain how it works. It's really a good thing. We all want to occasionally look at Fox, because the things they say on Fox are just so outlandish and so crazy that you just got to look sometimes. You just got to. It's, wow, are they really saying that? Are they really? I mean, basically, they call for prosecution of demonstrators in Ferguson as terrorists. They want to arrest the stepfather of Michael Brown for inciting a riot, as if they needed him to incite a riot. And just, they go on and on with all kinds of examples of how these people are out of control and need to be reined in a bit more. And it's just, it's riveting. It's riveting television. It's riveting propaganda. It's something that occasionally you start watching and then you realize, hey, you know what? It's tomorrow and I'm still watching this and I can't stop. And it's dangerous. So what the Fox Safety Device does is it can set the time from anywhere between, they suggest 10 minutes for beginners, up to 35 minutes, which is really the maximum safety allowance. And at that point in time, it will automatically switch your television set back to the channel that you were on before you switched over to Fox News. And what this does prevents you from being sucked into the Fox vortex, which so many people have had happen to them over the years, where they basically find themselves starting for amusement's sake and then basically not being able to resist anymore and inevitably nodding their heads and agreeing. Yeah, I've heard this before. This makes sense. This is the truth. I heard it on Fox. It's sad. I know a few people who are institutionalized now because of that, and it's a long process to detach yourself from Fox, but the Fox Safety Device is a safe way of doing it, of experimenting and just pulling yourself back before it's too late. We have other reactions to previous bits of civil unrest that I think are kind of apropos for now. The author James Baldwin, way back, we're talking back in the 1960s, when there was civil unrest then, was commenting on some of the same issues that are applicable today. This is from an interview in Esquire magazine. Question asked to James Baldwin, how can we get the black people to cool it? His answer, it is not for us to cool it. But aren't you the ones who are getting hurt the most? No, we are only the ones who are dying fastest. Yeah. And then there's a whole lot more. I'm just going to read a little bit of this because this could go on for literally an entire day. What would you say ought to be done to improve the relationship of the police with the black community? You would have to educate them. I really have no quarrel particularly with the policemen. I can see the trouble they're in. They're hopelessly ignorant and terribly frightened. They believe everything they see on television, as most people in this country do. They are endlessly respectable, which means to say they are Saturday night sinners. The country has got the police force it deserves, and of course, if a policeman sees a black cat in what he considers a strange place, he's going to stop them. And you know, of course, the black cat is going to get angry, and then somebody may die. But it's one of the results of the cultivation in this country of ignorance. Those cats in the Harlem street, those white cops, they are scared to death, and they should be scared to death. But that's how black boys die, because the police are scared. And it's not the policeman's fault. It's the country's fault. Question. In the latest civil disorders, there seems to be a more permissive attitude on the part of the police, much less reliance on firearms to stop looters, as compared with last summer when there was such an orgy of shooting by the police and the National Guard. I'm sorry, the story isn't in yet, and furthermore, I don't believe what I read in the newspapers. I object to the term looters because I wonder who is looting whom, baby. I guess I should point out at this stage that this is the 1960s. People had a way of talking then with cats and baby and all that kind of thing. It was kind of neat, actually. But, one more final question here. How would you define somebody who smashes in the window of a television store and takes what he wants? To which James Baldwin replied, before I get to that, how would you define somebody who puts a cat where he is and takes all the money out of the ghetto where he makes it? Who is looting whom? Grabbing off the TV set? He doesn't really want the TV set. He's saying, screw you. It's just judgment, by the way, on the value of the TV set. He doesn't want it. He wants to let you know he's there. The question I'm trying to raise is a very serious question. The mass media, television, and all the major news agencies endlessly use that word looter. On television, you always see black hands reaching in, you know. And so the American public concludes that these savages are trying to steal everything from us. And no one has seriously tried to get where the trouble is. After all, you're accusing a captive population who has been robbed of everything of looting. I think it's obscene. Well, go to the Esquire.com website if you want to see the full interview. James Baldwin tells us how to cool it this summer, from 1968, and every word seems to apply today in 2014. Hey, our phone number is 631-632-6901. If you have anything you'd like to say, I hope there are people out there who are thinking, who have something to say, whether it's in agreement or not in agreement. And boy, I've certainly had a lot of debates over the last few days. Plenty of people who do not agree with what I say. I know this. But the important thing is to be open to dialogue, to not dismiss people, and to try and put yourself in someone else's place. I find I'm doing that a lot. I'm always trying to put myself in somebody else's place and see, well, how might I feel if this was a situation I found myself in. That gives you some perspective. And clearly you can never really know. You can never really know until you succeed in putting yourself in that person's position. It's a tough thing to do, but I think not enough of us even try. 631-632-6901. I'm not going to go into delay until I see a couple of calls come in. And if a couple of calls don't come in, I've got plenty to make it to the end of the hour. Not a problem there. I saw the video of the 12-year-old kid in Cleveland. Disturbing video of his life ending. And again, this is another issue where people jump to assumptions and don't try and put themselves in the situation. What's this kid waving a gun around on a playground for? Of course, he deserves to be killed. What an idiot. Well, first of all, if you've ever been 12 years old, and I think most of us have been, you don't always do the completely logical thing. All right, number two, running around playing with toy guns is something that, unfortunately, kids have done for as long as I can remember. And yeah, you know, all you NRA people out there that are trying to tell us how great guns are and encourage kids to play with toy guns and real guns, you shouldn't be so upset at this. Of course, I realize that the person carrying the gun is the color that kind of worries you. Otherwise, you would be saying, yeah, civil unrest, take down the government. That's what the Second Amendment was all about. With certain people it is, with certain people it is not. I understand that. Fact is, what this kid was doing was not a threat to anybody. Even the person who called in the report to the police was recognizing that, saying it's probably fake, but it's annoying. It's scaring people. Unfortunately, that information was not relayed to the cops on duty. So, yeah, you can't really blame the cops for that part of it. But that's only a tiny part of it. What do? They, you know, I'm not a cop, and I try to put myself in that position. But I think, you know, I think I could probably do a better job of assessing a situation than driving my car right up to somebody at high speed in a potentially dangerous situation. Why would you do that? Why would you drive right up to the person? There was nobody else around. They could have basically driven across a few feet away, a few dozen feet away, used one of those megaphone things they got and talked to the kid that way. Instead, what they did, and this is all there on the video, they pulled right up to him. And within 2 seconds, the cop on the passenger side had shot him. Now, they're claiming, and this is the most incredible thing, they are claiming that they ordered him 3 times to drop the gun, which also doesn't make any sense because they say he was shot because he was reaching into his waistband. Well, okay, you're telling him to drop his gun. If the gun is in his waistband, then he has to reach for it to drop it. So right away, I'm confused. But all of this happens in 2 seconds. Look, go out right now, all right? Find the nearest 12-year-old and yell something at him 3 times within 2 seconds and see if he does it. You know? It's not very likely. And I don't think you could even do that. I don't think you could even yell something 3 times. What happened, and the video shows this, is that the cops panicked. Just like in Ferguson. Just like in New York. Just like in so many other places. And wow, is that sad. What's even worse, though, what makes me livid with rage in issues like this is the lack of accountability, is the lying that takes place. Clearly, this was wrong. This should not have happened. And you can't really blame the kid. He was basically doing what kids do sometimes. I don't think it's a good thing. But you can buy these guns for $20. You don't have to be a certain age to get them. Change that, you might change some behavior of kids, but you cannot blame the kid for a messed up society that is fixated on guns. So when you have a situation like this, you basically have to deal with it in a more reserved way. And that is not what we're seeing. We're seeing situations where people panic in buildings and kill people because they don't know who they are. These are cops panicking. We see situation. This is the one I'm really kind of worried about. The chokehold of Eric Garner in Staten Island. Well, you know what? The grand jury has been meeting on that. That was already defined as homicide by the medical examiner. So now the question is the cop who committed that homicide not guilty of homicide, but should he stand trial for homicide? You know, to me, that's a no-brainer. You basically have an unarmed guy accused of selling cigarettes. I still don't understand that. I mean, you can sell cigarettes, and apparently they came from different states, so you have to do something differently. I don't know. It's a stupid thing to even scold somebody about, let alone kill them. But this guy is put in a chokehold and killed for that. Because the cops did not know how to control themselves. So that grand jury is going to come back with a decision. And I don't know what will happen if the decision is yet another example of police getting away with murder. It could happen. It could make the situation get even worse. Okay, we didn't get any phone calls. Amazing to me. But I think that's part of the problem, is that people don't seem to care. Obviously, people care around the world. Around the world, they do. And we need to kind of burst out of our bubbles and start thinking, start talking, start debating. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll be happy to address any issues that are brought up there. But not talking about this, that's a surefire way to make things never get any better. All right, that's it for our show tonight. I want to thank people who stuck with it and kept listening. Please be part of the dialogue. Be part of the conversation. That's the only way you get to change things. OTW@2600.com, email address. Stay tuned for Finn's Revolution coming up right after this. Have a good night. We'll be right back. Hey, kids, it's Finn. Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Our guest, Mr. Robert Sloan, is unable to make it due to some terrible traffic conditions out in Nassau County. But we're going to plod on and play some, I don't know, music from Bob Dylan that he played the other night live in New York City, and a tribute to the late, great Bobby Keys of the Rolling Stones. It's like an old-fashioned classic rock night. But I believe it was there.
Down the street. people are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone and not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be like an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman that don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in the lake. I'm not that eager to make a mistake. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
They got earphone heads, they got wanna rise and light a leg. All the gold and silver being stolen away. Turn out looking east and west from who above his mind. Kansas City, 12th Street and Vine. Nothing's standing there.